The views and discussion expressed on this program do not necessarily represent those of the hosts of the program, WMKV, Maple Knoll Communities, WLHS, the Lakota Local School District, or staff and management. The information and advice presented are educational in nature and not intended to be taken as specific legal, accounting, or other professional advice. Always consult with your own legal, accounting, or other professional before making any investment. Welcome to Real Life Real Estate Investing, a show to help you gain financial freedom by investing in real estate. Brought to you by the Real Estate Investors Association of Cincinnati and the Ohio Real Estate Investors Association. You're listening to Real Life Real Estate Investing on WMKV, WLHS, and the Maple Knoll Radio Network. And now your host, Vina Jones Cox.
Good afternoon. I am Vina Jones Cox, and this is Real Life Real Estate Investing, where this week, like every week of every year, of every market, we're bringing you the information and inspiration you need to start or grow your own real estate investing business. And I think it's official, even though it's not official. Like no one amongst the powers that be who get to define whether or not we're in an actual official recession. No one has said actual official recession, but boy, everybody in the real estate world is saying, "Oh, come on, we've been in a recession for like 6 months to a year already. I wish they'd just come right out and admit it." So. This upcoming year on Real Life Real Estate and at Cincinnati Rio, we're going to be talking a lot about how does one meet the challenges and, just as importantly, grab the many, many, many opportunities available to you as a real estate investor during a recession. And we're going to be talking to a lot of people who are more experienced real estate practitioners than what you might consider experienced, you know, like somebody who's been in real estate since 2010. They've got 15 years, going on 15 years now of experience, but that's not the kind of person that we're going to be talking to a lot this year, because folks like that, as successful as they may have been and as, you know, as much as you might admire the businesses they've built, they have never had the experience of going through a recession in the real estate business. They have only ever seen markets that have gone up since the day they bought, and up both in prices and in rents. So to kick off our how you guys cannot just survive but thrive in the 2026 market series here on Real Life Real Estate, we have Mr. Jim Shapiro, real estate investor, property manager for 20 years. Do you do that math? That means going back to 2005, which was before the last recession happened. Past president of the Real Estate Investors Association of Greater Cincinnati, and my guest today to talk about how to recession-proof your rentals. Jim, welcome to Real Life Real Estate.
Thank you, Vina. It's a pleasure to be here.
I'm so happy to be seeing the world read recession again. It seems like a really long time. I mean, you know, the Real Life Real Estate was on during that. You know, like we go back to 1996, which means actually the show has been going on through two recessions, because we had the 2001, you know, we had the tech wreck, and then we had that whole thing that happened in 2006 that we don't all like to talk about because we get, you know, flashbacks and PTSD.
Wait, that's when I got my best deals.
That's exactly right. That is exactly right. And that's the message that we're going to be trying to get through to folks over the course of the next year is, yes, there are things you're going to need to do to protect and save and maybe restructure or get rid of what you already have, but that you do that at the same time at which you are dealing with the fact that there are some really good deals available. So let's just, since our topic today is your expertise, I mean, you manage like 550 doors, so you're in the thick of this all the time. Let's talk about what happens to rentals in a recession.
Well, first, it's a great time to buy rentals because prices are going to go down and people are going to be in trouble. So we'll talk more about that later. But what we're really looking at is, In the rental business, you know, we're working with tenants who are also struggling in a recession. We're working with expenses that are going to continue to climb as some of our other issues are going to be bigger with our tenants. And so we see a lot of behaviors that may be different a little bit. Some of them we've seen in the last few years after COVID. Tenants, more people living in the same house, more generations. That's become a really big factor. There's a lot of multi-generational families because housing costs have gone up. And despite what we read in the news, I haven't seen the incomes climbing as dramatically as the expenses. Mm-hmm. We're going to see, you know, vacancy issues, especially people that are trying to get really high rents because that's what they paid high prices and they need them. And we'll talk more about that strategy. Some of them are going to find it takes longer to fill, and they're going to have to be a little more pragmatic is what I call it. You know, there's going to be a lot of supply, and demand is going to be flatter because people are struggling. Mm-hmm. And one of the observations we were talking about a little while ago is a lot of our good tenants are not moving because they start looking around and they say, wow, everything's really expensive, but my landlord hasn't raised rents, you know, $500, $800, but I start looking around and I need to pay $300 or $400 or $500 more for something that's not that different. Maybe I'll just stay put. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of the people we see applying now are not, our good tenants are more not moving. And the tenants I have applying now are often people that are not the people I want to be renting to. We are needing to really screen as aggressively as ever, because if you get a bad tenant, you're going to be guaranteed thousands of dollars in losses. Mm-hmm. There's no, if you get taken, fooled by a tenant, you're in trouble.
Yeah. Now, people I don't want to be renting to, quote unquote, is let's expand on that statement, because that what that's really about is, I don't want to rent to people who can't keep up their side of the contract. And their side of the contract is, I will pay the rent. I will do that every month. I will not beat the heck out of the property so that when you get it back, you have to spend $20,000 more rehabbing it after you just spent $100,000 rehabbing it. I will not cause problems with the neighbors. You know, it's there's a contract that they sign, and when we're screening people, what we're trying to do is establish based on past behaviors whether they can and do and intend to keep up their side of the contract.
Right. The screening becomes, has always been, one of the most important things we do for our clients. And I use a system that I learned from Vina and her brother, who used to handle a lot of this. Now I teach a lot of that at RIA. It's really important to have a consistent standard system to use that keeps you out of trouble with fair housing, keeps you out of trouble with you know, being accused of not making fair decisions.
But also keeps you from handing your keys over to a person who's going to pay 2 months' worth of rent and then hold you up in court for 4 months while they don't pay rent, and then you get the property back, and again, your entire, like, 5 years' worth of profit is wiped out by the fact that you have a $20,000 rehab to deal with.
Yeah, vacancy costs are the biggest negative in this business, so managing to reduce vacancy has always been my focus. One of the things we may do more in a recession is work with people, just like we did during COVID. When people were struggling, but there's a big difference now. Mm-hmm. In the last 4 or 5 years, the federal government gave away a lot of rental assistance, and that money is all dried up. There is almost no rental assistance in the marketplace right now. The federal money was cut in the end of the Biden administration, and the Trump administration has cut HUD even more dramatically. The City of Cincinnati right now, they funded $800,000 in rental assistance, but that's just for the City of Cincinnati. So I have clients all over the region here that they're not eligible for that. And so when people fall behind now, we are moving to evict quicker. We had a period of time where people would fall as much as a year behind, but they'd apply for the assistance. We had people get $5, $10, $15, even $20,000 in assistance. Those days are gone. Now if you get 2 or 3 months' rent of assistance, you know, you're lucky. And organizations and a lot of the charities, like St. Vincent de Paul, who's great and very generous in our community, but they don't have the funds that they had 4 years ago. COVID drove a lot of that, and now that is gone.
Mm-hmm.
So...
Mm-hmm. You're listening to Real Life Real Estate Investing, talking today to property manager, investor, real estate broker, obviously, since, you know, y'all do know that your property manager is supposed to have a real estate license. I don't care where you are in the country. That is the case, right? And leader of the Cincinnati REIA Rental Property Owners Focus Group, Mr. Jim Shapiro. We're talking about and answering questions about how to recession-proof your rentals. So how would you ask one of those questions? Well, one option would be to give us a call at 877-772-9658. Again, 877-772-9658. Another option would be to send an email to vinaradio@gmail.com. And today, for the first time, we have a third option. See, Mike would have pushed the button that would be like applause, and I don't even know if you know. No, not the slow clap. That's a completely different. No, not slow clap. We have a text line. Apparently, there's been a text line here for like the whole time we've been here, but I just never knew what it was before. So, if it was more convenient for you to text. 513-201. Ah, there we go. Hey. There's the applause. Yeah, you gotta learn where that button is, Bob, because you're going to need it a lot for this show. 513-201-8249. 513-201-8249 is our text line. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to Real Life Real Estate Investing. I'm your host, Vina Jones Cox. My guest today, Mr. Jim Shapiro, who has been in rentals long enough that he's seen recessions before in rentals, and in fact is seeing one right now. And we talked before the break about how what happens in a recession is demand goes down because people move in together. Oftentimes it's multi-generational households, although in the depths of that last recession, Jim, we saw like just friends, you know, like me and my friend. I have two kids and a husband, and my friend has two kids, and we all want to move into this one single family home because there are three adults in the house and only two of them have jobs. And that was, that was sort of the way things went. And it's funny because, real estate crashes, two true crashes, which is, I don't think that's what this is. I think this is a normal recession, are usually preceded by oversupply. Like too many houses got built. There were too much going on and not enough people to buy them. If you'd ask, I don't know, our officials or our media in 2022, if there was any chance that there would be a high level of vacancies, they would have said there's no possibility because there's not enough rentals. And yet you're saying right now, yeah, we're having lots more vacancy than we did. How is that possible? If we don't have enough rentals, how are we having vacancies?
I have seen lots of new construction going up all over the region. And it's a different... we got some texts.
I got a text. I know. Hey, I'm so excited.
We do have a text.
And so I'm not quite sure I understand, you know, the discussion. I mean, I look around Cincinnati, and there's areas where there's, you know, all around Clifton, there used to be a real demand for housing there. They've built thousands and thousands of beautiful apartments.
Apartments. That's right. The thing. It's apartments. And we can't apartment our way out of a housing shortage because people with multiple children who want a dog and they don't apartment.
Well, there's all these office building conversions going on. It'll be interesting to see how that all affects the next few years.
Mm-hmm.
There was another one just announced in Cincinnati this week.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we're going to see, you know, a lot of different shifts, and part of it will become a need to kind of buy a little differently.
Mm-hmm.
You know, really being attentive you can't count on the rent going up and the value going up over and over.
To save your butt.
What you can count on
is
your material cost and you know, expenses are going to go up. You can count on taxes.
Yeah. Yeah, every single family owner in Ohio just got another 10% tax hike that they haven't seen yet.
Yeah, that was an unfortunate law they passed recently.
Yeah.
We did win a battle about a transfer fee, but...
Yeah, that's only Hamilton County, though. That's every owner of a one to three family rental property in Ohio over the next 2 years is going to see their real estate taxes go up 10%.
Yeah, and there's a lot of people... When you're buying a property for more than the last person paid for it, you need to plan that the taxes are going to go up. Not just because the state or county did anything differently, but if the last guy paid $150 and you're paying $300, you should expect your property taxes will double.
Yeah, absolutely.
And some of those people bought them 15 years ago for $100,000. I had a client just sold a building. They were doing okay, but they didn't know that they paid $285 and the last guy had it assessed at $115.
Oh.
They weren't counting on the taxes tripling. And once that was about 2 years ago. So next year the taxes in Ohio are going to get adjusted again on the triannual review. And if you paid a lot more than the last person was assessed at, you need to plan for that. And it's very much something you can plan for, but you have to know.
Yeah. Yeah. And we're going to come back to that you have to know part and why people don't know, but we do need to get to some of our listener questions. Let's go to line two and talk to Jonathan from Miami. Jonathan, welcome to Real Life Real Estates.
This is the Summit Investor Group travel blogger. How are you all?
Hello, Jonathan. I'm good. How are you?
Great. I love what Jim is saying because it's like I'm just sitting here nodding my head and trying to figure out, God, what point should I really bring up here that would interest you and your audience the most? I think one of the main things is that it's not a recession, it's an asphyxiation. Hmm. It's a slow choking where slowly people are dropping out of the housing market. People can't afford. It's just excruciatingly slow.
Mm-hmm.
I would characterize it that way. The other thing is, and by the way, I wanted to throw in, Pete Fortunato avoids the issue of discrimination by saying, I don't like you. that's his way of getting out of...
If you say that to the wrong person for the wrong reasons, though, that's still discrimination.
I love Pete, but some of his strategies would invite... He deals with people he knows and a different market and clientele. I have to sometimes be very careful when people say to me, well, Pete said, because God bless him, Pete's brilliant, but his approach is different than most of us should be using. It's also, remember, Pete is renting, you know, A-minus houses, A houses, you know, beach houses, nice houses on the water. He is not in a low-income, low and moderate-income inner-city rental area with a different clientele who desperately need housing. That's most of my clients.
Mm-hmm.
But the strategy Pete uses would not work in the clients that I'm working with.
So, Jonathan, you want to hear
I can imagine.
You want to hear a fun fact about Miami?
Yeah.
It was in the top three cities in the United States this year for delistings.
Well, yeah, I'm watching it. I'm monitoring it because I have access to the MLS. I'm seeing it.
Mm-hmm.
But what's really interesting, here's what I wanted to bring to the conversation here. First of all, I want to second that I'm seeing condos opening up all over the place, and I'm thinking, who is going to be living in this, and who can afford that? I have no idea who they think can afford that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we have a big influx of Northeasterners who are running from Mondami, you know, people coming from South America. It's always like, it's kind of like a bathtub where you pulled the plug out, but you got the water running. It's kind of a little bit like that in some ways.
Mm-hmm.
But still, the amount of new construction is just huge. And I'll give you a good example of what I'm seeing in the market, for example. And I went over this deal. I had posted it in your group, and also Sam had commented on it and a bunch of other people. But if you look at the difference between what you can get for rent, and even if you took it sub two with a sweetheart, 3 point whatever rate, it still doesn't work out.
Mm-hmm.
Because the price is so high. and the insurance and the taxes are so high that there's just no way for you to cover the property with a rental. So then you start to get into creative approaches, and there are three things that I've been trying to do, which, you know, it, supporting what Jim is saying about how Pete does things and they don't always work for everyone else. That was a comment from one of our colleagues, which is that you can give someone an option for the difference that they can't get from the bank, but they've got to be agreeing to it, and they've got to agree, the buyers have to agree, that they're not going to get any appreciation.
Yeah, and it's going to be it's going to be an interesting thing to watch this settle out, because when you've got home buyers who will not buy at the prices that are being asked in your area, mm-hmm. and also investors who aren't willing to buy because they can't in your area, what's left? I mean, it's either don't sell, which is why Miami's, you know, properties are being delisted in Miami. Like 45% of the properties last year in Miami got put on the market, and then they didn't sell, and they got pulled off the market rather than drop the price. Or the folks who they're not selling because they want to, they're selling because they have to. End up losing the properties to foreclosures, or, as you say, doing something creative with them. So, Jonathan, I appreciate your call. We need to move on to our next questions, but thank you so much for contributing to the conversation. All right, so rumor has it we have a text.
We do have a text.
I'm so excited.
Dun, da, da, dun. Okay, it looks like this one was corrected by the texter named Catherine. And it reads, do I need a real estate license if I am managing only rental properties that I own?
Aha.
And that's a Columbus area code.
Columbus area code. Okay. So, excellent question, Catherine. She has her own property. She wants to manage them. Does she need a real estate license?
No. If you own your own properties, you can manage them. However, I remember a few years ago, one of my friends was a realtor. And he owned properties in an LLC, and they told him he could not manage them because he didn't own those properties. His LLC did, and since he was a realtor, he had to manage them through his broker. And so there's a, you know, we advise people to own properties in entities, but technically then you're not the owner, so you may need to look at that. Now, no one's really coming after owners who own their own property and manage them and paying attention to that. However, the legal question came up for my friend Dave, because he owned properties and he was a realtor, and they required that he do it under his brokerage, and he didn't really want to do that, and he gave up his broker license so he could manage these properties mm-hmm. as the member of his LLC.
Yeah, I remember that case. I remember Dave tearing his hair out over that case, in fact. And what that really came down to was money. It came down to, because if you manage it through your brokerage, that means your brokerage holds the escrow account, your brokerage holds the deposits, and really everything's supposed to process through your brokerage, and your brokerage is supposed to get a commission on right. your rentals. So that was more a matter of like control and money, I think, than it was of, let me just say, I've never heard before or since then of anybody who has been gone after because they were the member of their LLC. The LLC owned the properties and they managed them.
Right. That mostly that won't happen. But he was a realtor and it made it more the division of real estate went after him, nobody else.
Mm-hmm.
When
mm-hmm.
he gave up his license, it was okay because he was the manager of his LLCs.
Yep.
Catherine, thank you.
Yes, and thank you, Catherine, for being our first ever texter.
Yay!
Yay. Oh, found the button. There it is. Oh, keep poking at it. Nope, still not there. Uh-oh.
One of these days, my finger will...
There we go. You're listening to Real Life Real Estate Investing, talking today about recession-proofing your rentals. When we come back, we're going to talk about... not like what what's going on in the market anymore, but like what you should be aggressively doing as you're buying more rentals, because that is, this is a time when you should be doing that. If you have any questions, you can give us a call at 877-772-9658. Again, 877-772-9658. You can send an email to vinaradio@gmail.com, or you can text us, 513-201-8249. Welcome back to Real Life Real Estate Investing. I'm your host, Vina Jones Cox. My guest today, Jim Shapiro, talking about recession-proofing your rentals. Since this is the last Real Life Real Estate of 2025, since the next two Wednesdays fall on Christmas Eve and then New Year's Eve, I want to thank Dana for reminding me to remind you that the Cincinnati RIA meeting on the first Thursday of the month would fall on New Year's Day. So there won't be a first meeting of the month in January. There will be the usual second meeting of the month on the 15th. However, all Cincinnati RIA members are invited to come to the CoRE meeting in Columbus on January the 6th. And in fact, if you register for that meeting, we will send you a recording of it so that you don't have to drive 2 hours north. The topic of that meeting is 10 strategies that successful investors are using to thrive in the 2026 market. So thank you, Dana, for that reminder. Now, Jim, you said you had kind of introduced the topic before the break of buying properties differently now. I mean, I think thing number one we need to say is don't stop buying properties. Like, don't stop buying them when they're on sale. Don't get so freaked out by the fact that your last one stayed vacant for 3 months before you lowered the rent enough to get somebody in it. Instead, go buy two more just like it, except for a lot less money,
at a lower price.
from a motivated seller, or maybe with creative financing from a motivated seller. The thing is, I'm not sure people understand how to run real numbers.
I remember a long time ago, someone OU said to me, comps are, you know, just because someone else overpaid doesn't mean you want to. And this is going to be a really big issue in the next couple of years, because as prices are changing, realtors are going to continue to say, oh, the house next door sold for this, and the house down the block sold for that. And those comps aren't going to be quite as valid in a recessionary market. So
nor do they matter at all if my goal is not to sell the property. I don't care what the property is worth if I intend to own it as a rental for the next 10 years. I care what my monthly payment and expenses are.
Which is exactly, we should be buying our investment properties based on income and expenses, on what's the return going to be on that, not on what did the guy next door pay, because if he overpaid, you know, you don't want to overpay. And he's a homeowner. He may have a different situation, whereas we're looking for a return on an investment. I think a lot of people got used to that. Everything was going to go up, so I'll just, you know, follow the and realtors. And I'm a realtor, and you're a realtor, but God bless, realtors are, most of them are motivated by that commission check they get the day you buy, and property managers are motivated by, can I continue to make revenue for you in a positive long term for the next 3 to 5 years? Not, you know, so we bring a different perspective. And your numbers have to be based on income and expenses. Now, there's a term called capitalization rate, cap rate, which is based entirely on income and expenses. Comps are great, and apartment buildings always sold on cap rate. But I've been a believer that our, even single families, while the bank may not use a cap rate, you should. I should. Because I want to know, is this going to be a profitable, will the income exceed the expense?
You know what is becoming a more popular number thanks to DSCR loans? That service coverage ratio. That was something that, again, all apartment buildings would know what the debt service coverage ratio was. But a lot of owners of single family, two family, three family homes never even thought about that number. And that's, it's not cap rate, but it's another kind of measure of, am I buying this at a price and at terms where I can actually pay all my expenses and also make some money for the joy of management and whatnot? I think a lot of people got really used to, I don't know, what I call the TikTok method of evaluating properties, the 1% rule.
Yeah, 1% rule is really easy, but... And a lot of people were overpaying by the 1% rule.
Mm-hmm.
And
but it worked because rents went up 15% that year.
Right.
And they're not doing that anymore.
The values go up, rents go up, you're looking at equity, it's okay. I think it's important to say that in this market, there will be great opportunities to buy. During the recession, the last recession, lots of people got out of the business. I bought houses for $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 in 2008 to 2012. The foreclosure storm created the best opportunities probably happened in my career.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to see, especially in the small multifamily, I think a lot of people have paid super premium prices based on cap rates that were didn't really focus on, you know, was it going to be a profitable?
Mm-hmm.
With something that used to be a 10 cap was suddenly a 7 cap.
And a 2 cap at one point.
And it didn't make any more money. But we'll see. It's going to be interesting. You really need to look at how can I manage expenses, and how can I, and how can I stabilize income.
And just I don't know. We could probably spend the rest of the show on this. And math is never good on the radio. It's really hard to do math on the radio. But profit, your profit is not going to be your net, your gross rent minus your principal, your interest, your taxes, and your insurance. There are other real expenses involved in owning a rental property. And yes, you need to be putting aside money for maintenance and vacancy and capital expenditures, even though you just went in and rehabbed the whole house.
Reserves are really important in this business, and saving. For some of us, the reserve, some of my clients, the reserve is a credit card. But they know that if they have to get something expensive, they'll fund it one way or the other. But if you have a furnace goes, in January, you don't have the option to figure out my options. You have a day to get that furnace replaced because people are cold and pipes are going to freeze. If you have a building with a boiler, last summer was the time to figure out what happens if the boiler goes, because you can't go replace it and put in mini splits and electric baseboard. All of a sudden, if in February your boiler goes, you're buying a boiler and you're putting it back in, and that's $14,000, and you should have been prepared for that. Especially in the small multis where there's a lot of those boilers. God bless boilers.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's important to really understand your numbers and what's the income really going to be?
Yes, and I see so much education out online where the numbers that they're telling you to use do not line up with my experience of reality. Okay. Like they'll say use 7% total for vacancy and maintenance. 7% of the gross rents total for vacancy and maintenance. And I'm like, okay, but the thing is, if I have one vacancy for 1 month, that's 7% right there. That doesn't cover any maintenance. And also, where's the capital expenditure? Where's the right reserve for the furnace and the roof and the windows and all the things that are eventually going to go out? And we're going to talk more about reserves when we come back from this break, because that is the thing. We watched dozens of really good, successful rental property owners go down and lose entire portfolios over the fact that they did not have reserves in the last recession. So when we come back, we're going to talk more about reserves, how much you need, and where to get it if you don't have it right now. You're listening to Real Life Real Estate Investing. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to Real Life Real Estate Investing. I'm your host, Vina Jones Cox, talking today to Jim Shapiro about how to recession-proof your rentals. You can, by the way, talk to Jim 12 times a year as part of the RIA of Greater Cincinnati Rental Property Owners focus group. And when is that focus group, Jim?
It is on the fourth Tuesday of the month from 6:30 till roughly 8 o'clock. We'll keep talking as long as people keep asking questions.
Fourth Tuesday, and that is, of course, online. You get more information at CincinnatiRIA.com, although I warn you, you do have to be a member to attend all of Cincinnati RIA's focus groups. So, Jim, let's talk about reserves. Because you and I spent 3 or 4 years going, oh, my God, did you hear that so-and-so just lost all of their properties and declared bankruptcy? Oh, yeah, did you hear that so-and-so? And these were not like people with two or three properties. Some of them had a dozen. Some of them had several dozen. Some of them had 100 or more properties. And what it always came around to was in a recession, when you've got all these other forces acting on you, you may have to drop your rents. You may have a longer vacancy period than you expect. You may end up doing more evictions, because when you have a two-tenant household and one of them loses their job, they don't typically just move out. They typically, you know, ride it all the way out to the end of the eviction to try and save some money to get the next place. So you got all that acting against you, and then also a roof goes bad. Like, you had less money to start with, and now you got a $10,000 roof to replace, and because you've got three dozen properties, the next month the furnace goes bad in a different property, and it just all snowballs. And a lot of these folks, their biggest problem was they had no cash reserves for this stuff. So let's talk about how much reserve you think a typical rental property owner should have, and at what point does that become ridiculous? Like, I've heard people say, well, you should have this much per property, and then I say, yeah, but if I have 100 properties, that means I've got like $250,000 in the bank at all times. Is that ridiculous, or is that like necessary?
Well, the odds of a very large portfolio like that changes the parameters. But let's say you've got three houses and one goes vacant and one furnace goes. All of a sudden, you've got, you know, a lot of expenses. We talked about a reserve rate. If you have a house that's renting for $1,500 a month, that's $18,000 a year, and the furnace goes and that's $6,000 or $5,000, you know, that's not 10%, that's not 7%, that's 30% of your revenue for that year. So you've got to be thinking about not just in terms of a simple percentage, but what are the, you know, if you know you've got a new furnace, that's one thing. If you know you've got a 30-year-old furnace, then you need to be thinking, well, that furnace is going to go one day, and I'm going to get that phone call. Do I spend $900 on a blower motor, or do I spend $3,500 on a new furnace? And furnace prices have doubled since 2019. I used to pay $1,600 to $1,800, and now I'm paying $3,200 to $3,600. And I buy a lot of furnaces a year. Mm-hmm. We did two last weekend. And that owner put off replacing his 40-year-old Williamson's forever. Now he's selling the building and ended up replacing both of them. He would have been better off doing that a long time ago. Mm-hmm. So the percentage numbers don't really necessarily reflect the reality of your property. If you know you've got a house with an old roof and two houses with old furnaces, you need to be thinking what happens, or have, you know, Visa card ready to go, but now you're paying 18%, 21% interest on your furnace.
Yeah, and I would say, just as a general policy that I learned, I relearned. Okay, so like what I learned about how to do rentals was, make everything last as long as you possibly can. Yeah, you remember seeing the boiler at my dad's building that literally was patched with Pepsi cans. Literally, like, because hey, this will hold it up for another year, right? Why spend $18,000 on a boiler when I can pound this Pepsi can flat and patch this hole up? That was how I grew up. But then I learned that the easiest time to borrow money to stabilize a property is when you buy it. Don't if you've got that old Williamson furnace in the house and you're like, well, it still works, I'm not going to replace it right now. No. When you buy it, replace it. Stabilize the property, and then That's when you were that is when you were at the number where you can save like 20% of your rents and know that that will be enough because you already stabilized it.
What I saw during the period when houses were so cheap is people got in the practice of not following that rule. They didn't buy it and renovate it. They bought it and did a paint and carpet and re-rented it. And that kept them going for a while. But when things started to really go, they hadn't, you know, when I started, you taught me a lot of this. It was plan for the renovation, borrow enough for the renovation, borrow purchase plus repair money, and have a stable home. That practice kind of went away, and a lot of people ended up in real trouble. And now that the prices are so much higher, those things are as important as ever, because, you know, if you get upside down, you're in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
The how much to have reserves, you know, like you said, it kind of varies. If you have a house that's got a new furnace and a new roof and new windows and everything is really solid, it's one thing. If you've got we have a lot in Cincinnati. The average house in the city of Cincinnati is 75 years old. That's three generations of plumbing, three generations of electric, old retaining walls, old driveways, trees. A lot of people don't look at driveways, trees, and retaining walls and front porches can be huge expenses. If you haven't planned for them, when something happens, you know, those really add up. And that, you know, that's not the part that people are renting, but when the wall's falling down behind the house, you better be ready with $10,000-$12,000.
Yeah, so for some of our listeners, it might be too late. Like, I already have the house and I don't have the reserves and the recession has already happened. So what would you suggest they do?
You know, one of the things that has been a real focus in Cincinnati REIA for the last few years is a lot of creative finance and creative deal making. One way to do it is bring in a money partner. Find somebody. We have this Friday morning call, haves and wants, and a swap. Maybe you sell part of your property as opposed to selling the whole thing, and you buy it. You sell it to an investor who says, "All right, I'll give you $30,000 for 25% of your investment," and maybe they don't even want the rental income. Maybe they want, you know, one of the things,
long-term growth or tax breaks.
They want long-term growth. They want, you know, the management portion. They want, you know, Pete Fortunato has that great diagram of all the different revenue streams in an investment. It doesn't have to be you have to give them, you know, the rent. They may just say, "I've got money. I'll buy 30% of your house for, you know, for $30,000, for $50,000, and now you go upgrade that house. Now you can look at that higher rent. Now you can maintain expenses." Because one of the things that happens in these old houses, and we have a lot of them, is the monthly, the repair costs eat us alive. And if you can stabilize the house before you get the repair costs eating up all your profit every month.
Yep. All right. Thank you, Jim. We are unfortunately out of time. But again, this is going to be a big focus of the education at Cincinnati REIA and here on Real Life Real Estate throughout 2026, because we don't just want people to be able to get through this with the properties they already have. We want them to come out at the other end with more and with some of the best deals they have ever seen in their lives. We will be back next year with more information to put you on the path to financial independence through real estate investing. Until then, happy investing.